a thank you note. She's thanking us.
By mail?
By mail. Not from Cambodia, but from Menlo Park. I guess she had her friend where she stays in Menlo Park mail it out. But here it is. Dear friends, just a very short note to thank all of you for the dear pleasure of seeing you and the many kindnesses attendant upon the visit. May all of you be well and happy. Love, Beth. So we're getting close to the end of the Genjo koan. We're getting to some... even the most poetical part of it that comes down to the basics, really, of what Dogen's question was when he was a young monk trying to figure out what it was all about. And then as he began to meet with his teacher, he began to find answers to his questions. So the one we're reading tonight, make sure I've got this straight. Is the 10th. And it sounds like this. When the Dharma has not yet fully penetrated body and mind, one thinks one is already filled with it. When the Dharma fills body and mind, one thinks something is still lacking. For example, when we sail a boat into the ocean beyond the sight of land, and our eyes scan the horizon in four directions, it simply looks like a circle. No other shape appears. This great ocean, however, is neither round nor square. It has inexhaustible characteristics. To a fish, it looks like a palace. To a heavenly being, a jeweled necklace. To us, as far as our eyes can see, it looks like a circle. All the myriad things are like this. Within the dusty world and beyond, there are innumerable aspects and characteristics. We only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. When we listen to the reality of myriad things, we must know that there are inexhaustible characteristics in both ocean and mountains. And there are many other worlds in the four directions. This is true not only in the external world, but also right under our feet or within a single drop of water. This was long before anything was known about what was in a drop of water. This was long before anyone knew how many universes there are. This is long before anyone had gone to the depths of the ocean. As I was preparing for this, I was also reading Science News, one of my favorite reads, and they had an article about the census that has just been done, and scientists took a year and made a census of the ocean. And they dived really deep, and they found things, people, beings that nobody had a clue was there. Amazing. And I thought I would pass these around so you could have a little glimpse of how amazing they really are. Nobody knew about any of these before, and they're just a few of what they realize now are myriad more that are there that nobody has ever seen. Many, 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 many. So in a sense, practice means, as they always say, allowing ourselves to pay attention. So even though we might think the ocean is a circle, if we even look into the water, we're bound to see a sunfish going by, or the back of a whale, or a piece of seaweed that has myriad lives on it. So that if we become awake, then suddenly the world, whole world is alive. It's not just this thing that we're dealing with and getting through day by day. It's alive, which means we're alive. And that's what Dogen is trying to point out, that it's not about ideas. It's not about how we think about things or how good we are at figuring everything out. It's how vital and active we can be. That the world is all action. It's happening. It's being. And we're being and happening as a part of the world. So, of course, there are differences. We have a sense of the wholeness of it, the absolute sense of how big it is and how small we are and how limited we are in an unlimited situation. And that can be very bewildering and puzzling. How can it be both? And yet here we are. These small, limited in our own life as we are enacting and being enacted, but also limited in the length of it. We're just like some of these little animals that live for this long. It seems long to us, but in the long scheme of things, our little lives are very, very small. How can that be when the whole thing is us? We don't have to figure it out. There's really no way to figure it out. But if we practice, then we live it. That's what this practice is living the whole, the contradiction, the paradox, willingly. So Dogen says, living as an original person, we see that we're deluded and ordinary. We have to see that. We're not going to be special, even though we'd like to be. It would be so nice. So self, this little self of us and this huge world are all working together as one dynamic whole. And nowadays that's becoming a very, very big subject. It's amazing how much argument there is about it, that how many people still think that environment is not an important issue. But it's it's becoming a wake-up subject for many, many people now in all countries of the world, and a very crucial one. It's not known whether the environment will survive us. It might not. And yet it is us. And so without recognizing that, without accepting that, we trash it without knowing what we're doing. It's a strange place we've come to. And yet, it's a kind of helpless place in a way, because each one of us can do very, very little about it, except to see and recognize and accept, do what we can, admire what comes up, like those beautiful animals in the ocean, and keep adjusting our values as new information comes. It's when we get stuck with one point of view and say, well, this is just the way it is. It's always been this way. This is what my grandpa did, and so I'm going to do it too, no matter what. And it doesn't work. We need to study, and Dogen often talks about studying the way. Study what's before us, what the situation is. Understand it as best we can. So, it's the Bodhisattva life. The Bodhisattva has to accept whatever, because we have so little choice, and accept that life is messy and complicated and often very painful, and willingly participate. Participate with wisdom, which gives a kind of a wider view, and with compassion, which plunges us straight into the middle of the disaster. We're both. Our minds work both ways. And the Bodhisattva is always working through whatever life is dishing out and being willing to enact whatever is required for the situation. Just keep on doing, and keeping faith with it. We don't know how things turn out. It's often an enormous surprise. And we should be ready to be surprised and not be stuck somewhere. So, Okamura says, to see the world as one circle of ultimate reality is not our goal in Zazen or in our life. That we practice with suffering. We're not practicing to get out of suffering. We don't have a goal that's some far-off place that we're trying to get to that's going to make everything all better. In this practice, we vow to stay with all things, be with all things. Be with our brothers and sisters, the ants and the frogs and the cows in the field, and our neighbors and our friends and our enemies. It's all us. And truly, I've read in Science News also that they are beginning to prove that there are many universes that came out of the Big Bang, not just us. I think that is really cool. because that's what the Lotus Sutra talks about from way back, almost 2,000 years ago. And then the 11th section is very short, so I will read that one and save 12 and 13 for next week. Or 12 for next week and 13 for our last meeting. I think that's right. So this is, when a fish swims, no matter how far it swims, it doesn't reach the end of the water. When a bird flies, no matter how high it flies, it cannot reach the end of the sky. When the bird's need or the fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole of space and vigorously acts in every place. However, if a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. We should know that for a fish, water is life. For a bird, sky is life. A bird is life. A fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. And we should go beyond this. There is practice, enlightenment. This is the way of living beings. So our question is, what is our life? What is our element? What keeps us going? And what, if we leave it, we have to die? We don't name our element, do we? But practice, enlightenment, the way of living beings. So there's time for discussion, questions. Jeffrey?
Well, your words are very poignant this evening. I was really enjoying this past week where I got a chance to share with my fourth and fifth graders something that's related to science. And I explained to them that when I was their age, scientists talked about millions and millions of stars that were in the heavens. Mm-hmm. And then in the 1970s, Carl Sagan told us there were really
billions.
Billions of stars. And then last week, there was this article that appeared in the newspaper that had a number that said that there were 300 sextillion stars. And I, you know, was, even though I'm an educator, I had no idea what a sextillion was. I had to look that one up. It was, you know, it was a 3 with 23 zeros after it, and I got to write it on the whiteboard. And I said, this is magnificent. In my lifetime, I had seen it go for millions and millions. Yeah. And I showed them what millions and millions would look like. And it's the whole concept of how it's just all a contingency. Mm-hmm. Everything that we think about. And I had seen some of those photos of the ocean, you know, the things that have been discovered in the ocean. And then they'll find a new dinosaur bone.
Yes.
Some mammal that was 18 feet tall or something. if the beat just goes on, you know, somebody else tells you about string theory, about particles. Well, I'm really willing to just live with the paradox, the mystery, just let it all come. I can't, this little brain of mine can't wrap itself around all
that. It's mind-boggling.
And I just, you know, just offer that one up. I'll just sit here and become as intimate as I can with what's kind of going on inside me.
Yeah.
And leave the rest of it for greater minds. It's just beyond my comprehension.
I think it's helpful to cultivate awe.
That's it.
It's helpful in many different ways. And
it's just wonder.
Yes, it's wonder.
Mary Oliver has a beautiful poem. It's called Summer. You know, she asks, who made the black bear?
Yeah.
There's all these things, but she's really looking at a grasshopper that's eating out of her hand. And at the very end, she says, she's been strolling through a field, and she lays down in the field, and she just looks at this grasshopper, and she looks at the grass that's growing right in front of her. She said, what am I going to do? Or what should I have done with my day? But just become very intimate with what was right in front of me.
Yes.
And then ask you, the reader of it, what should I do with my precious life? Or what should you do with your precious life?
Mm-hmm.
She uses the word precious life in her poem.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Well, that's what this whole thing is about. It's about each one of us. That's what the Gendo Koan is. It's exactly that. What are we doing?
Is it a thing or is it a verb? Do we Gendo Koan our life? Do we just super intimate with,
it's the mystery of our life.
This practice is about really just seeing everything as process. And
yes.
There's no kind of...
There's no answer. There's no answer to the meaning of life. It's the open-endedness of it, but it's also offering it as a koan is a question, an unanswerable question. It can only be enacted. All those it's very difficult because the mind immediately tries to answer what is the sound of one hand clapping, for instance, and try to figure it out and puzzle and puzzle and puzzle. And it's only when you give up that kind of thinking and relieve yourself of intellect that you can begin to feel it and then to do something about it that will show your teacher that you... have gotten beyond the intellect. So this isn't a koan quite in that way, and yet it is. It is a kind of offering of the amazement of life, of our own, each one of our own life, and what it requires of us as a practice. And as a way of life. So he's using all of these images in order to try to open it up for us. But it's really just what the kids say. It's awesome. Thank you for that. Ron?
Probably over-intellectualizing this. But when you first started about, from this, I remember someone said, so I looked it up, in the Japanese, and I would have a Chinese translation, and it was interesting because really beautiful, exhaustive Chinese. but I don't think, this is over analytical, but since Jeffrey asked the question, is it a noun or a verb? None of the above. Or you could say it's an ergative verb where a noun becomes a verb. I mean, I kind of felt like Gen means present and Joe means actual. Somehow it means success. And that poem is interesting too. Aside from all these Zen questions, the original lead is like a desk.
Yes.
And some kind of
a sign.
Edict, or not really edict, but
announcement.
Or,
yeah.
Decree or something. We're using governmental terms.
Yes.
They turned it around to be this abstract kind of question. It's sort of like the sermon on, the sermon on the moment or something like that. But that's just weird. But I kind of like the whole thing because it's, you know, it's different threads and different kind of observations and different little, you know, teachings on how to just right now happens,
well, it's realizing the way, or realizing your life, isn't that what it means, basically?
That might be really cool, you know, you have to answer the question.
Yeah.
It's an oldie village, it's absolutely remarkable.
It's nice to know Chinese. That's very handy. Thought I had it here. Oh, there, on the first page. Again, to appear to be present, something potential becomes actual, to be in the present moment. And Joe, to become, to complete, to accomplish. So as a verb, it means to manifest and to actualize, and as a noun, it means reality actually and presently happening. So the Genjo koan, or the Genjo, is what's happening now, and ko is what you were just describing, an official report or record of cases. So Takahashi translates it as the actuality of instruction. Abe says it's a spontaneous manifestation of true suchness. Cook, the manifest is absolute reality. Nishijima, the realized universe. Tanahashi, actualizing the fundamental point. And Uchiyama, actualization of reality. So, I don't think we can even take our pick. It's like trying to express what is called the two truths. And as the Sando Kai says, it's like a box and its lid. It all fits together so well that there's no way to really talk about it as separate. And yet our experience is that it's separate. So it takes a lot of practice to begin to see into and study deeply how that could be. So it's 8 o'clock. So one more. And therefore, we will have to decide something else to do. And I have Donna Lynn's list that she put together from autumn. I don't know how many of you have this, with many suggestions. So I would like it if you all would think about this so that I can be preparing before January begins. So she's suggesting the Heart Sutra, the Bodhisattva vows, the Paramitas. Here's the Genjo, Sandokai, Precious Mirror, Diamond Sutra, the Voices of the River Valley, that's Dogen, and the Eternal Mirror, also Dogen. Lots of choices, and there are many more things than that. So give it some thought. And we can enjoy something else.